M19. Number 2B.
So, this was the turning point. Can you see that if you only have a concept in Christian Science that there is one being, one man, one Christ, one universe, one God, good, that this is the same what any mystic, any good mystic would tell also. There's nothing different. If you read the good mystics of the Middle Age, they say the very same thing. And this is dangerous because this oneness is an undifferentiated oneness. Now, on an undifferentiated statement, you cannot build understanding nor science. Science demands that you have clearly differentiated, identified elements, and that you begin to see the relationship between these clearly identified identities of being, and only through that relationship you can build up orders, you can see the law in which these orders evolve, and you can see the interrelationship of orders as structure. And only in this way we find really an understandable oneness. Now, how did it come about? Naturally, John Dolly didn't see right from the beginning what would be the outcome of his contemplation. But it came because he always believed in scientific obstetrics and always believed that the idea of science could be given birth for those mentalities, for those consciousness that are transparent for the idea of science. And the very first thing that happened to him was order. That he began to see that in the presentation of Mrs. Eddy's teaching, in the textbook, that he began to see their definite orders of ideas. You see, order is already when you make relationship, you order the individual facts at a certain place, and naturally you can only order things when they are differentiated. Say if you have seven stones that look, or let's say seven pearls that look exactly the same, you can't put them into a definite order. You can put them there in any random way. There is no order in it. You can't put an order if they are all the same. But the moment these stones would be differentiated, say, in bigness or in color or in any shape and form differentiated, you can put them into an order. The smaller, then the one a little bit bigger, and bigger, and a little bit more bigger, and so on, you get order. Through differentiation, you get order. You can have order. And he began to see, through his study, he began to see, for instance, that the days of creation, as presented in Mrs. Eddy's writing, present a irresistible, definite, unchangeable order of ideas. That each day presents a definite idea, and that those 7 days are an irresistible order. That you can't change the order of those 7 days. That was his first insight. And actually he could see that because Mrs. Eddy herself said in the third day, she said, the third day is the third stage in the order of Christian Science, indicating therefore if the third day is the third stage, that the second day is the second stage, and that the first day is the first stage, and therefore also consecutively the fourth day is the fourth stage, fifth day the fifth stage, sixth and seventh. And by seeing the idea that is brought out through each one of those 7 days, he began to see a sequence, an intelligent sequence, that leads thought from the first day in a definite way to the last day, the seventh day of perfection. So he could see that the days of creation would give us a definite line of reasoning, a definite line of demonstration, which would say that from the inception of an idea, the first day, let there be light, that from the inception of an idea, if we know the order, we can go along the order of the 7 days, so that we will know that on the seventh day you will have the perfect demonstration and form of this idea. So we could see, you see, that there is a order, that you cannot change the order, that you cannot spiritually begin with the fourth day and then take the seventh day and then perhaps the first day and then the sixth day and then the second day, that this does not make spiritually sense, that there is no sense in it. This was the first inkling he got that Mrs. Eddy had presented Christian Science as an ordered presentation of ideas, and that we could therefore understand the divine order. While he was studying those 7 days and got the touch of it and the order of it, he also somehow began to see that the third degree in the scientific translation of mortal mind, you know, the third degree of understanding, was giving a sevenfold order. You have there 7 ideas: wisdom, purity, spiritual understanding, spiritual power, love, health, holiness. You have 7 again, and he could see that there again was a definite, irresistible, divine order in it, which would lead again from wisdom, that was the first one, to the last one, which is holiness, which would lead a thought that is taking in the idea, the right idea, and therefore would be a wise idea, that it would be conceived in its wisdom, that this would not stay there just as wisdom, but that it would have in itself the dynamics of evolving up to the 7th point of holiness as a culmination. So again, he could see these orders had always first 7 stages, and they always would show the law of creativity. How in Christian Science the law of creativity has a definite order, and therefore would give us a lead how to work creatively in Christian Science. So soon afterwards he was studying the Lord's Prayer, and he could see there too that there are 7 great statements, and again he could see an order in it, a irresistible order in it. He was studying the commandments, the Beatitudes, the first 7 Beatitudes, and who could see again a sevenfold definite order. And finally, all that seemed to be parallel symbolization of one underlying order, the creative order of the Word of God. So at that point, you see, he already began to see that there, that ideas, that the divine ideas are not just atomistic facts, but that each fact had a definite place value within a divine order. And this naturally had a great practical implication, which would show to us that if we understand that law of creativity through those 7 stages, that our lives can be creative, that in our study, in our life, in our demonstration, we can use that law of creativity. We are now no more at the position where we think Now, how shall I approach this subject? What shall I think? Could you give me a good thought? Could you give me a good statement? You know, these atomistic truths, huh? But that now you just can turn to the general law of evolution, which if you were 2 weeks to talk about, I would tell you how today in the world they begin to realize in the world the law of creativity, and I state it in the same way as the days of creation and as Mr. Dolly saw it 50 years ago. Today, see how Mrs. Eddy was 100, 200 years in advance of the age. Her concept of science was far in advance of the age. She could already see that science is structural when nobody else in the world was thinking about that, when they still were thinking in the old classical way of science as an atomistic knowledge fact-finding activity. She was already presenting a science that centuries will intervene until we understand her science. She was in advance of the age. Today the Christian Science movement is far behind the age, far behind. They are still there where they were 100 years ago. We have to be awake. We are responsible for Mrs. Eddy's discovery. Nobody else is responsible but we. The individual is responsible. It depends on you and me, if this revelation is not going to get lost. And so, at that moment, John Dolly began to see these things, not yet in a very clear way, but in a dim way, I would say. He felt them more than he knew them at that time. And he was teaching that in his class, in his association. As a lecturer in the movement, he taught those seven in his lectures. And then he began to realize that the movement was in a bad state. In 1928, think of it, and the whole movement outwardly was having its outward, upward trend, he could see something was wrong. And therefore he retired from the lectureship. He said, golly, I have to get back. I have to get back to my books. I have to study. We must see something more in that book. Why? He told me, you know, Max, he said, I could see us traveling all over the world that people were just believing in Christian Science, that it was another faith, that it was another religion. They believed science, they not even realized that they didn't understand science, not even realized that that was not understanding. And he already said at that time, he said, if we are not going to find the science in the textbook, the movement will be finished. I remember way back when he was president of the Mother Church, 1918, when he went around from church to church as a president to talk to the members and so on, he said, you know what's wrong about you all is that 95% of you don't talk about science and understanding science. You only talk about who is my practitioner. Yes? Now, can you see what happened? There was somewhere a transparent mentality that began to realize that really what was fundamentally important was science and understanding. And that Mrs. Eddy was right when she said in 1910, unless this science is not understood as a science, it will be believed in and it will get lost. So, think of it, with 50 year old, and usually other Christian Science teacher and lecturer come into their job, he retired. He said, nothing doing anymore. It's quite nice to go around the world and sleep in the Hilton hotels and so on, and go first class on the boat, but that is not what Mrs. Eddy wanted us to do. And so he went back to his practice and started thinking, thinking. And it is interesting to see that a new period came in his life. As I was saying up to that point, say, he began to see in 1914, I think it was the first time, or 15, that he began to see order and was thinking along the term of order in science. But then a new period came in the 1930s. Little by little, he was captured by the statements in the textbook that Christian Science has a system. He was mostly captured by that very clear statement that you know from the textbook, where Mrs. Eddy says, "Divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate." We have again, knowing is demonstration. To demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based. So he said, how? Here Mrs. Eddy says, divine metaphysics is reduced to a system. Who has told me ever what the system of Christian Science is? Has ever anybody asked what the system is? Quite apart from the question, has anybody answered that question? And then he began to see that the textbook is full of these terms, like law, order, rule, system. Has anybody answered what the laws of Christian Science are? I have never heard anybody. What the orders of Christian Science are? I have never heard anybody. What the system of Christian Science is? No. That Mrs. Eddy speaks about the divine infinite calculus. What is that divine infinite calculus? You know what the movement says? Well, this is just a casual word for Mrs. Eddy. Oh, it doesn't really matter, you know. Huh? Though, Mrs. Eddy says, when you understand the 7 days of creation, thought will accept the divine infinite calculus. Golly, that means something. That is not just a casual little word that slipped out of her pen. Yeah, it isn't. And unless the students of Christian Science begin to realize that, they will miss the boat. So, in those 30s, he began to see that the textbook is full of scientific terms, that are used in any science. And therefore, one can see why Christian Science is the proto-science, or the first science, the science of all sciences. Because it teaches what law is, what order is, what system is. And this went on for years and years, and he had some wonderful co-workers who began to see. He had an optician who suddenly wrote and said, "You know, John Dolly, I have investigated the whole textbook in regard to optics. I find every scientific term of optics in the textbook, and every time Mrs. Eddy uses those scientific terms of optics, they are right. They are not just phrases." And he had another wonderful student who was interested in the science of music, and she did the same job, and she took all the terms of music and investigated and said, "John, you know, Mrs. Eddy uses these terms all exact. They are all there." And so on. So he began to see that the scientific terminology that is in the textbook is actually the science of the sciences. That's what makes science scientific. Yeah? That's what he saw, you see, in those ages. He didn't quite know what will come out of it, but he had that wonderful sense, you know, that he would use scientific obstetrics every day, and that one could give birth to the idea of science, that to those born of the flesh, divine science must be a discovery and can be a discovery. So he believed in that, and he worked on that. And he worked with that in a tender way, in a motherly way, and in a scientific way, day and day and day without leaving it out. And little by little, the whole further revelation of what constitutes the signs of Christian Science unfolded. So, towards the end of the 1930s, he began to see much clearer than ever before what he saw already in the period before, namely those irresistible orders. And then it dawned on him that these various sevenfold orders are actually only like parameters. You know what parameters are? Let me put it in another way, that they are only various different illustration of one underlying order, the seven synonymous terms. That the seven synonymous terms, as defined in the definition of God, as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, that order is the fundamental divine order of creativity. And that therefore that fundamental order can be illustrated in many, many ways and has been illustrated in the Bible and in the textbook in many, many ways using other symbolisms, but always bringing out the divine, irresistible order of being. And you can see that if one has a sense that everything happens in order, and you know what that order is, not just only know that there is an order, but you know what the order is, namely mind, and then spirit, and that you can't have spirit before you have mind, and then soul, that you can't have soul and understand soul properly without spirit and mind, and so on up to love. That suddenly he began to realize that the definition of God, those seven synonymous terms, would be, so to say, the key to the textbook. So you can see that at that point Mrs. Eddy's prophecy was fulfilled, which I told you that she prophesied that in the 30s the new subject will be realized, namely the science of spirit. The Christian Science will be seen as a science. I have a few minutes left. I want to approach a new subject. And that was the crux of the whole development. Namely, if the underlying order of being is symbolized through the seven synonymous terms, then this makes only sense if we can define every synonymous term so distinctly and so differentiated from each other that they are clearly identified and defined identities. Did you get what I wanted to say? What I wanted to say is this, that in a science you can only build a science and a system if you're elements on which you build are clearly defined. If in chemistry you will define first your elements, what the elements of chemistry are, your what is the term, your table of in chemistry? The periodic table. Yeah? If you know the periodic table, you know, then you have defined your elements clearly, each one of them, and then chemistry can build on that differentiated, clearly identified identities of chemistry can build a science of chemistry. And so it is with Christian science, with any other science. First, you must have your elements, your facts, clearly defined. Therefore, what was necessary is that we could first define, sorry, I said we, because at that period I came into the picture, I was at that time involved in the analysis, that the problem was now, can we define each synonymous term so clearly that they are clearly distinguishable, differentiated values from each other? So that mind means mind and not spirit. That we can clearly define what is mind and what is spirit and what is soul, and that we don't misunderstand them and don't mix them up. Which is the great, great problem all over in the Christian Science field. The problem, are the synonymous terms freely interchangeable or not? That was the crucial question on which later Mr. Dorley was excommunicated. This was the question. The question was, are the seven synonymous terms, so do they lend themselves to be defined so clearly that you can see the value of each one being completely differentiated from the other values? In other words, the whole question of the synonymy principle came up. If you give me another week, I talk about the synonymy principle. It's very difficult for me to reduce everything into a few hours. But the synonymy principle will show you see, that synonymous terms, as the seven synonymous terms are, that synonymous terms have two different values, so to say. The one value is that they have all something in common. And the other value is that everyone has something not in common with the others. And that which they have not in common with the others is that which differentiates them. That's clear. Huh? Therefore, the point is, does Mrs. Eddy actually use the seven synonymous terms for God in a clearly definable, differentiated way or not? That was the question. Because up to that point, and even in the movement up to today, they cannot answer this question. You know that. You know that the seven synonymous terms are always somehow a main problem in any teaching. In the class teaching, there can be a problem or a subject in a lecture or in a periodical article, and they use them 80% wrongly. Why? Because they have never found out how one can find out the differentiation from one synonymous term to the other. But that I will tell you this afternoon.